Hello, ladies and gentlemen, witches and wizards, and all of our fans and friends. Thank you for joining us on Nom Talk Network here on Nom Watch Review, where we discuss our favorite movie while discussing by eating our favorite food and drinks. My name is Alejandro, aka Cowie here. I have a little mixture plate here. It's more like maybe kid meets maybe adult, but I got some really good mandu, dumplings here. It's really delicious. And dino chicken nuggies with a little shameless plug. Can of Pepsi here. Along with me, I have three badasses. I would like to introduce myself as well. Jonathan, please introduce yourself, my friend, and what you're having with us today.
Hello, I am Jonathan Graves over at This Means Podcast, and I brought with me some animal rights vegan fried rice, and then some orange chicken because I needed meat.
Heck yeah. Hey, it sounds delicious to me. Right on. Fantastic. Brian, myself, go ahead, my friend, introduce yourself.
I'm Brian Peterson. I'm Wayward Scientist. I'm on Instagram and TikTok and all that stuff. And I'm raw dogging some golden grams. I had a craving recently, and my drink of choice is just some ice cold ice water out of my funky cold Medina mug, in honor of international superstar Tone Loc, who
Heck yeah, right on.
hydrated.
Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt the last part there. I apologize. But hydrate, don't dihydrate. I appreciate that. Dude, Teddy Grahams are like childhood to me. I used to do anything like snack on those for days and eat them like with like as a cereal concept too as well. Last but definitely not least, Eric, please introduce yourself, my friend, and what you're having with us today.
Hello, I'm Eric Ramirez, and today I am snacking on Starbursts because I'm a candy addict, and it has been a long week, so I am having a caramelizer IPA. It's
Oh.
delicious.
I
Or
like that.
caramelized.
I like the picture on the can. It looks very. Ah, oh, yes. Was that Voodoo Ranger?
Yeah.
Oh my God. I have like
So
an
good.
action figure over him across the table. I have to share with you later. Oh my God. Remind me later. Fantastic. Oh, I love the fact that I recognize a beer off an action figure and not a. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I
Baffling.
digress. But so we start today. Where here we are talking about Ace Ventura, Pet Detective. When you hear that name, a lot of people have childhood memories associated with this here by any way, shape, or form. Before I start, let me go look in the queue room over here. We have Q with us in the house today saying I'm having some chicken pot pie and drinking some cherry RC. Heck yeah. Sorry, I had to bring that up. Q, always loving you have here, buddy. Wanted to see what you're having with us today. But as we're talking about Ace Ventura today, I also want to go ahead and try to get the popcorn bucket ratings here while we have this here. Currently, Eric, what did you rate this out of five popcorn buckets, my friend?
I rated it a 3.5.
Excellent.
It's still a lot of nostalgia for me because, like, I'm from the generation that this was like its heyday, everything like that. Having rewatched it, there are some issues, but I'm pretty sure we're going to get into that. But yeah, no, 3.5, it's a solid score for this. It just brought up all those memories.
Right on, right on. Excellent, excellent. Brian, yourself, my friend, what is your popcorn ranking out of five popcorn buckets?
I'm at a 2 right now. I've honestly seen the sequel more than I have seen the first one. Like, and I'm a big fan of I'm Ace Ventura is a huge part of my childhood. But I got my reasons. I'm sure we'll get into it.
I got you. No, I totally get that. I get that. Excellent. Oh, Jonathan, my friend, with you, 5 out of 5 popcorn buckets. What is your rating, sir?
Yeah, out of 5 popcorn buckets, I'm giving it a 1.5. I am a film connoisseur. I kind of like love all cinema, and this film, even though it's nostalgic, it does have some issues. It doesn't quite meet, its expectations and what it could possibly be. But obviously, Jim Carrey's giving it his all. It just feels like, not to get too spoilery, but everyone kind of feels like they're in their own little movie. And I love it for that reason, but like it holds the movie back from excelling in far as like an Encino Man where everyone knows what they're doing,
No, totally. I get it. I get it. I like the fact that we're all like-minded here. Don't get me wrong. I love different opinions here, but when it comes to discussing things and you kind of getting your point across here, it kind of helps when you actually just kind of go with the wave of understanding here. And honestly, it looks like we all have kind of progressed in that sense of understanding that, in this day and age, the comedy of the movie, his age, I'd say not the most great, but the fact that it's done, decently, it has a little season here and there when it comes to that. So I myself, very similar to you guys, have given a 3.5 out of 5. Now, before we start on to the beginning of this film here, I understand that you all three of you have, somewhat of a connection here in which with this film, history with it, you guys not only understand it, you have understanding, you are also kind of grew up with this in a sense too as well. So I'd like to start off with that. Brian, I'd like to start off with you, my friend. When did you first see this film? Do you remember your history attachment to it? Is there anything that really
Oh,
kind of attached to this big time?
for sure. This was a rental from the video store, like the summer it came out, like the summer after it came, like absolutely. It was a guaranteed, very excited to watch it. My dad hated going to the movie theater because you can't pause the movie, and seats were really uncomfortable back then. So this was a VHS rental, and it was definitely life ch it was Jim Carrey just like that. My second popcorn bucket, the reason it's not a one is because Jim Carrey's performance is just so, everything he does is just like, it's absolutely captivating. Like it's just like he's got a way he moves and speaks, just like the performance is just, he puts everything into every scene, and it really just sort of blew up my mind as a kid, like to see somebody who was like that huge, like when it came to like a performance. Did I love like 3 solid minutes of Star Trek joke improv late night? No, it wasn't great. Doesn't all work, but what works works,
No,
and
totally.
that's, yeah, it was like the first time I was introduced to Jim Carrey, which was so huge for the rest of my life.
Well, do you remember what around what age you were?
I must have been, was what, 94?
It was
Yeah.
94, yeah. February.
Okay. So if it was like the following September, I was like 7 years old.
Right on, right on. It's funny. I want to make a connection here. And just for the record, I like Jonathan's voice coming out very official, like delicate. It's like February 29th. I was like, ooh, look at that. Look at that. A little smooth insert there. I was like, ooh, Jonathan. All right. Oh, sorry. I digress. Oh, sorry. I have to get that
Actually,
bromance a little to the side there.
Alex, it was February 4th, just
There,
to
even
be
better. You corrected me.
very precise.
Damn.
Yes.
I said 29th. I mean, I'm sorry. I apologize to insult your actual
How
true.
dare you insult
Yeah.
the accuracy?
Speaking of past information, we're gonna move to you, my friend Jonathan. Where were you at? Do you remember a big your connection to the film necessarily? Where were you, and I don't know your feelings initially when it came out.
Absolutely, I'm going to lower the camera a little bit to show off this Bugs Bunny in drag shirt that I
Love
have
that.
from Cakeworthy, and I do that because Bugs Bunny was a huge part of my childhood, as was In Living Color, as was Batman. And so when it came to Ace Ventura, I had already been inundated with the Warner Brother catalog with other movies that were action movies, Rambo, Terminator. And when the trailer came out for this, it was like the pinnacle of these action movies, and then turned on its head with this parody. And that's how it was advertised to me. As a 7-year-old, I was gung ho about this. I turned 8 the year it came out, and I was just ready for it. I begged and begged, and I got to see it in theaters. So I absolutely like had the experience of a lifetime. Everybody was laughing, and I visually remember like my dad groaning so hard at everything that was going on, and he couldn't
Being
believe
a
it.
dad in the
But
90s.
I was so happy to be there. And to quote the 1-star review from Roger Ebert, at the end of his little like 3-paragraph breakdown of this movie and why it's terrible, he goes, "Kids might like it." And he was right. Kids love this.
That's it. That's like, why was he built for children? Like, I feel like he was built for children in a movie where he, can I swear here or no?
It's okay. Go for it. Go for
Yeah, Ace Ventura fucks. Like, the dude
it.
fucks, and it's just like, he's also for children, and it's the weirdest fucking combo in the world.
With the wacky over-the-top comedy and his rubber-like face, Jim Carrey actually translated so well to a cartoon that the Ace Ventura cartoon was good. Like, you just kept it going. And obviously, that second movie I hold near and dear to my heart. I believe the second movie is my favorite of the two. Like, it's no contest. But this first movie set the groundwork for that second movie to just to fly.
No, I get that. I get that. Eric, my friend, you with any nostalgic connections, your initial interaction when first seeing this film, what's your history with this, my friend?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Like Jonathan, like I saw this film in theaters. It was Jim Carrey, and being a kid who watched In Living Color with Jim Carrey and seeing all of his characters there, I was in it, which this year was a huge year for him because he had this, he had The Mask, he had Dumb and Dumber. Like it was just inundated with Jim Carrey, and he was like one of the biggest stars at the time, so of course I was gonna see it. And this man's comedy, even to today, like I said, 3.5, that 3.5 is mainly for Jim Carrey, because there's no beating his comedy chops, like anything like that. He was this film. Of course, the second film is my favorite, because I feel like the issues they had in this film, they were able to fix and adjust and everything for that second film to be as creative. But going into this, I feel like they were test running how much of a star that he could be, and he proved them right. So I love this film.
You hit the nail on the head with that, Eric. And before I give my opinion on this to my introduction, I want to read up the comment section here, Q-Ball saying, for me, 5 out of 5, a Jim Carrey classic. He's so perfect for the film. To me, he's the next generation Robin Williams. He's so insanely funny in every scene and pure comedy gold. I once had to do a nebulizer treatment because I was laughing so hard. It still holds up when I watched it. A lot of good points there, Q-Ball. Same here. Interesting. I was kind of curious about your guys' ages when you saw the film. Initially, I was around 7 to 10 seeing this film here. It was my coming to teenagehood adult comedy film. All three of you guys have mentioned it. And even Jim Carrey states this to this day. He gives Living Color the biggest, you know, acknowledgement of giving him a chance in Hollywood. And he claims to the day, if it wasn't for them, he doesn't believe that he'd be where he's at. And I remember him on Living Color as I was a kid, because one, Fire Marshal Bill terrified the crap out of me and entertained me at the same time. And his energy and persona, Brian, you mentioned before, he's so animated. He's so full of life, you know, and it's crazy how he could be made for an adult audience and yet be loved by a much younger generation that's below him too as well. So he just kind of personified himself. It was kind of weird for me because I knew him off of Living Color, but really what got me to like him was The Mask. And I understood that they kind of around came out at the same time. But like a lot of you mentioned before, going to movies was expensive and going out to public was kind of like, you know, not always the greatest thing because you had to do a lot of stuff and get snacks and, you know, times that by 2 or 3 if you had a brother or sister. So, you know, seeing movies at home at VHS was like the shit. So going to Hollywood Video was my equivalent to going to Blockbuster at the time being because we're in the South. And, you know, I was like, hey, I'm going to go see this. So, you know, shout out to Dothan, Alabama, the founding areas of Hollywood Video before it went down the trash. But hey, it happens. That being said, I digress. So let's go ahead and start off with the initial beginning of the film coming here as well. And actually, you know, before I want to say this here, just same thing. Jim Carrey has a huge, huge foundation of why all four of us have given this, you know, film a rating in general. And the reason why I'm saying this here is because, Jonathan, you mentioned before, he had a review by, was it Ebert? Or
Roger Ebert.
Mm-hmm. Was it Ebert? So that was so intense, so bad, that was considering that it was like, you know, this is not for me. However, we watched a Hollywood review on YouTube about 4 or 5 days ago, myself and producer Steph, that he mentioned that one of his biggest memories was having that review, that at the same time, that very same man writing an apology letter and putting it in and reviewing it again, saying I was wrong in his own ways. I want to put it up. I want to read it later in the future, but was really, really fascinating. And just to kind of actually put, you know, put Jim Carrey on a hypothetical pedestal in a sense of, you know, showing that even critics that disliked him couldn't deny the fact that this guy has some kind of like likable magnetism or talent. That being said, in the very beginning of this film, we have a delivery man, Jim Carrey, here coming into this very beginning here, taking this package, which he's handing it like Pele of any pro football player, aka as Americans know, soccer, going ahead, doing a little, you know, around that world, kicks, flips back and forth. Just his acknowledgement and how he comes up to this, comes up to the initial apartment complex of this very, very hot scene of coming into the elevator, having these things slam on the box of him, annoyingly back and forth, and like, ooh, I don't know what's going on. And you know what's funny about this? You know, just me, I don't know, as a kid, it irked the hell out of me because the sticker said fragile. And I understood that it was a comedy, but he was like nailing this shit like a hacky sack. And as a kid, I was like, no, how is he gonna, like, you're supposed to be a delivery person. How are you, like, how is this making you look like a real delivery person? So we get to this point as he's like Pele this stuff over here. We find out he has a destination, gets to a certain floor, and heads all, I think he calls it HDS. And as he goes to the front door, this door opens with this very familiar mug of a man. I believe, I don't know if he's a real life wrestler, like a fighter, but this guy is, this, I've seen him as a villain on so many things, or as that biker man. But we see a man to the door. He gives him the thing, saying, "Hey, you won this package." Guy even spots it and says, "This is kind of funky. Looks broken." Does an interaction. Looks down. Sees this really cute puppy that looks like a Shih Tzu. I can't think the actual breed of it, because I know
It's a
Jonathan
Shih
had it.
Tzu, yeah.
It is a Shih Tzu. Okay, good. Okay, cool. Because we have a our very level, adorable little nephew called Gus Gus over there with Jonathan. He was sitting there looking with big old puppy dog eyes. And as Ace Ventura does his interaction with him, and because he tells the actual person to make all the signings and so forth on this thing to support, I think at this point we can tell he's trying to distract them. So as he's having this initial sign, he goes down, picks up, which we think is, gets back up, says, "You have a good day," and walks away. As the door shut, we see Goon turn around and actually see, tell the dog, "Hey, come back, come back, come back." Do we know that he's actually a stuffed toy to reveal that Ace Ventura has the actual Shih Tzu. To show how, like, his dedication, he's like booking it slowly but surely to the car. Now, here's the thing. One of the things that kind of hold up on my own opinion here, because I want to go to all three of you here, I won't be blabbing about this. Somehow, mystically, he goes through two different alleyways, gets to his car, and the goon still finds him. And this dude just tears up his car. And eventually, you can tell that, Ace, Mr. Ventura, his car is not the greatest. So he may be taking a hit in, his business. We don't know at this point, because as we can tell by Eric's amazing background, his fantastic haircut when it comes to Mr. Ventura, his classic Hawaiian shirt, his red and black striped pants and boots, we can't tell whether it's actually insanity or if it's really out of, just really abnormal fashion sense. But at this time, we can tell by his vehicle that he's not doing so well. But he still loves pets. He got kibble in the center over there for it, and he has his pet, all set up, situated. So he's not doing so well. Now, he gets all this stuff. Guy is smashing his car. He's reversing over there. They're arguing going on. He even pulls a move where he sits there and decides to bite on the guy's hand to finger it up as he's going on the highway, and he gets away, right? He then gets the dog to we see, which it happens to be the victim or his client. Now, interesting thing about this client, it turns out to be his ex-girlfriend, we think it is, not, Ace Ventura's, but the actual goon that he still got the dog back from. Now, I was watching the AMC version of this, and as a kid, I was slightly confused about the situation here, because she asks, "How can I repay you, Mr. Ventura?" And he's like, "Well, I don't know." And she's like, "May I take your pants off?" And he's like, "Maybe you sure can." Now, when I was introduced to this in the VHS film, we see Mr. Ventura hold on to the ends, and he's doing this tornado-like thing going around here and going around there. And as a
A
kid, I never.
John-C-esque blowjob.
Yeah, exactly. And the crazy thing about this is, I didn't know as a kid what the fuck was going on. I just thought she was having a really hard time pulling off his pants. Now, as an adult, I obviously get know what's going on now. Now, in the
One.
a what's up?
One, now as an adult, how was that intense? I don't understand.
What's exactly.
happening down there?
So, on that note, too, as well, if you guys have ever rewatched this scene has been cut out multiple times through multiple streaming services. AMC has a major contract on this right now for individually before any other renting company. And if you do anything but stream on AMC or another service area, there's three or four scenes that are cut out in these versions of them compared to the actual film. I had to rewatch it once or twice because we bought a version for YouTube, which showed the full extent without the cuts. And when we saw all the versions that are on stream available for other streaming services. And this is only one of the three things that were cut. Now, that being said, this is the first 5 minutes of the film. We have an understanding of who Ace Ventura is and what his job is per se. I'm going to start with you, Jonathan. How are we feeling the pace of the film? In the beginning of this film, has anything stuck out to you most? I mean, are you liking it so far? How are we feeling?
pacing is genius and the directing is genius as well. This is why Tom Shadyac became the director that he became. This was his first feature that went to theaters. And he then went on to do The Nutty Professor with Eddie Murphy. He did Liar Liar. He did Bruce Almighty and Evan Almighty. And like, you can see the make and Patch Adams with Robin Williams, bringing it back to Robin Williams real quick. But like, you can already see the maestro working and his comedic prowess on display. You have Jim Carrey kind of bucking the idea of what a delivery man does. And also in this first 5 minutes, you also start off with Jim Carrey's lines. He doesn't speak normally. The first line he has is, hello, sir, how are you? All righty then. And like, he immediately skips over any inference of the guy answering and is just like, I don't care. I have this thing to give you. And then he goes, sounds broken. And then Jim Carrey goes, most likely, sir. And so like, it doesn't matter what this
is. It would have been nice though, he said. Yeah.
Sounds nice though. Yes. But yeah, as far as the directing, I think this is comedic genius. You start slow-mo and then it just builds and then it's like a bullet and you're just like zooming through all of this comedic set piece, which is the hotel or the apartment and then out to the car. And then he has the kibble for the dog in the ashtray. And then they're both biting the guy's hand in unison. And then when he, and then they pan from, or they track from the left side of the car where the dog's head is hanging out, doing like the dog thing where it's like catching wind. And then it tracks over to Jim Carrey and he's doing the same thing and then whips on the sunglasses and like, what an intro.
100%. 100%. Continue talking about the intro. Eric, how are you feeling initially? Is there anything that stuck out to you the most? Anything like any iconic things such as introduction that really stuck to you?
Oh, no. Like this intro is like great for the setting up the feeling of this film. Like physical comedy there, characterization there, filming and everything was great. What does stick out to me though is that scene where he sticks his head out the window. That's what I always remember. And then for them to keep that for the rest of the movie and even taking it into the second movie, like that's just genius. Like, let's give it to him. People loved it. Let's keep doing it. And we all loved it.
Exactly. Sorry, I'm eating my dino nuggies. Speaking of that as well, Brian, with his initial interaction with here, at the end of the film, how are you feeling right now, buddy? How is this whole interaction with you with this first 5 minutes of the film?
I mean, it's perfect establishing. It is, we are seeing a glimpse into the life of Ace Ventura, pet detective. We are seeing him perform espionage to retrieve a pet that's been taken by a violent ex. It is exactly, it is a action movie about a pet detective and it executes it perfectly. Plus, we look the iconic Ace holding his head out the window. Like, we see the scene in which his windshield is smashed and he never gets it fixed. And that's why anytime he drives, he has his head out the window. Like, and they stick with that bit for the whole, it's really perfect. But the returning of the dog scene where he's whipping around the room, you know, you can see the top of his pants in that scene. His pants clearly aren't down. So what is happening down there? Is it sexual? Probably not.
It'd be fantastic if it panned down and she's just cleaning his pants. Just like, yeah, I'm just tailoring just, your inseam.
Steaming the hell out of those pants. Just, they're wrinkle free.
I also got to say, I didn't know what that was either, like when it was happening.
No,
but I love the surf theme that's going on whenever he's like holding on. It's like, all right, now he's a surfing guy. I don't know.
Now, Eric, did you want to say something, my friend?
I do have to say, I did kind of know what it was because I had my parents let me watch movies like Basic Instinct. So I kind of had an idea of what was going on. But I mean, that intensity, like, was way too much.
It was so much. Like, how could you tell? It just, Jonathan, what you were saying, like, yeah, the whole Looney Tunes aspect of it, I think that's what a Looney Tunes blowjob looks like.
And you know, I believe that's what happens when you order an Acme prostitute. That's exactly.
Whoa, horny toads.
Horny toads. Whoa. I said whoa.
I said whoa. But like, oh my God, John, you mentioned it before though. Okay, you mentioned before. You know, and a lot of us that seem to be growing up, you know, within, you know, this 90s time frame of dealing with things like Terminator, dealing with things such as Beverly Hills Cop, things going in with, you know, back in the action films, we were talking about, we even say Basic Instinct, we even talk about Hannibal, things in which we'll talk about like Rocky, John Claude Van Damme films. So we grew up with a lot of action that tend to be like our icon and our role. So Jim Carrey and Robin Williams seem to be, you know, the heavy hitters of the comedic roles, gave you like a sense of like you could be a funny guy and not be the lead, you know, buff macho individual. So the ability he had to portray these anime things, like for example, this very sexual scene that could be come off as raunchy. You got to think about it too. In the 90s and even now, sex sells. That's what it is. Whether the industry likes it or not, it happens. And you almost have to play a game in a sense of realizing that being a human being, that sex exists, and you can either make fun of it and have a little understanding of it and kind of joke with it or just let it go. And it seems that he did an excellent job because, like I said, I was a kid. I didn't understand what stuff was going on with this here. So, you know, when it came to the situation here, him and Brian, you portray this so funny and going, whoa, going back and forth on the screen. Lord almighty, that was excellent, my friend. But, you know, he does that. But, you know, you look at Jim Carrey doing these kind of things, and it's just fantastic here.
Quick thing. Thank you, Alex, for bringing that up. I actually wanted to interject real quick.
Yeah,
because the fact that they got away with the sexual content in this movie by making it cartoony allowed for this character to be on the same plane as Pee-wee Herman and Paul Rubens' version of a childlike character, but he's also, you know, going on an adventure. And that also came out recently, thanks to Tim Burton's film. And then also you had Ernest at the same time. And all of these like really, really great actors portraying these childlike characters. Jim Carrey comes along and he kind of pushes the boundary on that a little bit with this movie, but he's able to not be put in that box because in the same year he had those other movies. And immediately he was like, you know, I'm not just one thing. I am all of these things.
Exactly. No, that's a valid point. I kept on thinking about Ernest Goes to Jail. Ernest, you know, gets scared stupid. That's like another iconic movie,
Ernest Goes to Jail. I just
exactly. And with Pee-wee Herman in the cast.
So much.
I know. So, oh my God. And it's funny. We kind of see it whether we like it or not, because, you know, all four of us, you know, could have some, you know, different, you know, we all grow up differently. We've all come from, you know, different paths and so forth. But at the same time, seeing the similarities in entertainment is just kind of a small percentage of seeing what the mass amount of world also finds similarities or love or interest of, such as Robin Williams, Jim Carrey, going into, you know, characters that, you know, forgive me, I can't forget his name, but the gentleman plays Ernest Pee-wee Herman. You know, you have these iconic heavy hitters.
Jim Varney.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you very much. You have these heavy hitters, and, you know, going back to, because we're digressing a little bit here, but, you know, no, we're not. We're talking about the film. Oh, screw it. So, you know, but, you know, you have, you know, such these heavy hitters here doing this. So you have Jim Carrey being able to portray these things, which leads us a little bit here. Before I go, this is two things. One, Q-Ball has additional comments. Says, yes, the movie was geared towards kids, which we've been mentioning this, who loved third grade fart humor, but there were adult jokes underneath. But his physical comedy timing was good. Q, you have been like in sync with this, sir. You, oh my God, I love Q so much. You are on the nip. We were just talking about that. In regards to that, speaking of Q-Balls, he also redeemed Hydrate. So for those, my friends, let's go pick up another thing on Hydrate. Don't dehydrate, please. He redeemed one more thing, which I'm going to go ahead and gear towards one of you, towards us coming in. I promise, not that bad. Just remember that here. So we'll go into that
Thank
next.
Thank you so much, Q. Thank you.
Now, that being said, we have an understanding where Jim Carrey is to some extent with his award, who he is, what is standing for. Given the fact that we understand as a human being, he takes sexual advances here and there, but he loves animals. We see that with the next scene coming in as he's going towards his apartment complex, and we run into, which I will say, I see this gentleman, he's still in my mind, still see him from Breaking Bad. I still see him as a mafia don inside of a dang wheelchair hitting a bell all day, but he happens to be, instead of his landlord, taking care of him, asking some questions, saying, hey, Mr. Ventura, you better not have any pets in there. And he answers, of course I don't. He goes to the door. Come on, you want to come in? A little delayed wise, takes the keys, does a little jingle, jingle, jingles a shimmy as he gets in there, you know, tries to figure it out, walks in, and we see an empty apartment complex, or an empty apartment. With it's fully furnished, you know, it actually looks like mine now I think about it. Man, things don't change towards this. But anyway, the point of that is the fact that we see him now in an apartment complex with his landlord that says, hey, you shouldn't have pets here. Does a little sniff because he sees he actually has also had cat treats in his bag. And, you know, he's like, oh, you shouldn't have them. And he's like, okay, I understand. Sniffs around. And then he steps back and Ace Ventura does the famous kick the door and it feels like it almost hits him right in the face and it stops right there. And then he does the classic. He's the messiah of all animals. And all of a sudden, every animal existence come out from bread boxes, toilet things, closets, vacuum cleaners, penguins carpets, in the drapes. Freezer. Yes, penguins in the freezer.
I'll never forget that.
This guy is like a comedic Jeff Core, and he's like has everything that is coming to him. So you see that he somewhat had a communication with actually, you know, communicating with the animals. Has a great, and we, under, I mean, let's be real. Is it possible to train all these animals to do this way? Yeah, likelihood of one man like him doing it. But this character is that iconic. He's that badass. So he has the ability to communicate with these animals. It also shows that the animals trust him this much. This is his apartment. He ain't making shit. And obviously he's trying to, you know, still catch things to make this money, because we'll find out a little later on. But you see right now that he lives in this apartment and he has all these animals that live with him. So his dedication to the craft is still pretty good. Amongst this, we're coming the next scene coming over and we were discovering the fact that we're introduced to a moving dolphin inside the Miami Dolphins actual pool. We go into the NFL division where we actually see the Miami Dolphins discussing things, which the Dolphins' name is Snowflake, correct, guys? I believe
that's correct.
All right, awesome, thank you. So I'm going to be transitioning back and forth here, but we see in a scene eventually comes back from saying that, you know, Dolphin is, you know, Snowflake is going to be looked at, because then we also look at a mysterious black hooded figures come into this little area, reach down. We can tell that there's some unknown murkiness going on within the Miami Dolphin Association. We find out later that the lead head honcho of the Miami Dolphin Association is now talking to, I believe, like one of the trainers. And we believe I know her from Friends. Her name,
Courtney Cox.
Thank you, Courtney Cox. Thank you. I appreciate you, Jonathan, coming in with a save again. Now, when it comes to this, we see the conversation and them telling, you know, hey, you just need to get this fish fixed. And you're like, it's not a fish, it's a dolphin. He's like, I don't care. I need to get the fish fixed. And, you know, where's the fish? Is it be ready for, you know, coming up? Because it's at the playoffs that we're coming on here. And they want to make sure that that fish is ready for the playoffs. And it's definitely, we need to figure out what's going on. Now, at this point, it's kidnapped. We know it's gone. We know it. The fish is gone from it. You know, not the whole audience, the rest of the community doesn't necessarily know about this. They're trying to keep it hush hush as possible, because we know at this point, by the admittance of the president of operations, that the Miami Dolphins Association is very suspicious. They have beliefs. You know, they have a guy that hasn't washed his jock strap in like 3 months because he believes that flies are good luck. There's all sorts of crazy things. So he doesn't want to, you know, panic the association what's going on right now. So he's asking them to find out, you know, go ahead and take care of this fish, aka a dolphin. Now, as they walk out of the office feeling defeated, they go into one of the secretaries. The secretaries mention, hey, I hired a pet detective. And they're like, pet detective? And they're like, yeah, it's a pet detective. It's very scientific business. And as they're meeting this here, we finally come to terms that he's really hurting for money, because we see Ace Ventura diving for a dove at this point off a roof, coming out and somehow mystically hitting the actual garbage trash that's three stories down there. So luckily he has his fantastic luck. Once again, very dedicated to his craft. Yes.
I mean, if you were going to get paid $20,000 to catch a dove, I would dive off a building too.
Exactly. Exactly. So we get this point. We see this here. He's really desperate for money, but dedication there in its finest. So initial interaction is being met between, you know, Ventura and the Miami Dolphin Association. We see the fact that, in, you know, long story short, that they associate Courtney Cox with him being his, you know, go-to contact with this. And he is hired, essentially, in a sense. At this point, as they're trying to, you know, go through many different things, he tries to go through his contacts and he finds out that in the first interaction, he goes into the actual fish tank where, you know, Snowflake was supposed to be, right? When they get there, we see that the rest of the actual media is out there taking pictures and so forth as well, doing crazy things, trying to figure out where Snowflake is because they're trying to get the story. And once again, they're trying to be very vague about the situation. As Courtney
Ace, get out of the pool. Get out of the pool, Ace. I just can't do it, Captain. I don't have the power.
Exactly.
As he's doing this, somebody had to do it.
40 minutes.
Somebody had to do it.
Oh. The heyday of fish lenses in this film.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. Exactly. It was a very gnarly, gnarly fish lens scene from what seemed to be the filter of the pool. Now we find out when he hops out of the pool that there is a specific gem, which is one of my complaints we'll mention a little later, that this gem is an unusual gem that shouldn't be inside this particular filter, but he could go associate with which happens to be a special gem on a championship ring of the Miami Dolphins. Now, with this thing, this is all happening all at once, trying to figure out stuff. Ace mentions comments to both the trainer and Courtney Cox's character. He's like, hey, I'm going to go back, look up some information. So he talks to a hacker. And this information, we figure out this, you know, found out from the hacker that there is a gentleman that bought a load of very special fish supplies that should be for aquariums that are for big boys, not necessarily for one person, but he's extremely rich person in the first place. So it keys an idea in Ace Ventura's head that it may be he might be a possible suspect. So they decide to go with him and Courtney Cox's character, decide to go to a get together or an area that happens to be, I'd say a ball or whatever the tribute this guy's hosting at his area there.
It's out of his mansion. Yeah.
Yeah, big ass freaking mansion. Jesus Christ. Anyway, rich people problems. But that being said, there is a plan now in order to get to this mansion and perform an investigation. Now, Brian, let's start with you, my friend. Q-Ball also redeemed You're So Punny. So what I'm going to do is I won't start with you, but you're going to have to come up with a pun with your opinion about the next topic that we're actually currently talking about, which I'm going to let you think about that for a couple of minutes. And I'm going to start off with Eric here. Eric, at this point of the film, we now discover that Mr. Ventura has a proper motivation. We know that he needs money. He's a good person. And the Dolphins just hired him. We see the Dolphins have a problem here. And we see that Ace Ventura is a little unusual in his, who he is. How are we feeling at this point?
Still liking the course of this film as far as we've gotten to, like the fish tank moment was funny and everything like that. But, the Dolphins, really, I get it. You had to have an animal, but you had to pick the Miami Dolphins. Like we could have picked anybody. but no, I like the course of this film from like the first initial scenes in the apartment and everything like that to when they get to the party. Kind of felt a little bit lackluster. I mean, you still had your funny moments and everything like that, but there was still nothing of like prevalence to me. That party scene is iconic to me, him falling into the fish tank and getting thrown back and forth, kind of like the blowjob earlier in the film. Very reminiscent of that, but I like it. A little slowed down for me, but it's Ace Ventura. His comedy just picked it back up.
I get that. Excellent point. And, oh, my fish tank seems freaking hilarious. And we'll go into that too as well. You're very prominent. It was an excellent point. And being very dramatic here. Brian, you need a minute more too. You want me to go on to Jonathan with his opinion? Are you ready?
One second. I'm consumed. Yeah,
you're A-okay. Take your time. It's A-okay. I suck at these sometimes. Q-Ball, we see you. Jonathan, my friend, how are we feeling at this point in time of the film? Are we still very pro-hero? The very antagonist here? How's the speed of the pacing? Still the same? How's your whole vibe of this?
Yeah, the whole vibe. I'm on board. I actually like the dolphin aspect. It's a unique animal to bring into this. It's one that we don't see every day or really hardly in cinema. And you also get the buildup to the Jaws joke, which I think is really funny. But yeah, like all of this is working for me. You have really great lines. I wanted to go back to some of what we skipped over just factually. Yeah. We had the passing of Mark Margolis, the guy who played the landlord for Ace Ventura. His top movie, he passed away just last year, but his top movies on IMDb are Pi, Requiem for a Dream, Scarface, and Ace Ventura, Pet Detective. he's only in two scenes, and one of them is just him watching TV. But that first scene is so iconic and obviously lives rent-free in my head, as this entire movie does. But whenever he says, Ventura, and then Ace goes, yes, Satan. And then turns around and goes, oh, I'm sorry, I thought you were someone else. just iconic. Again, like all of this Jim Carrey-isms, like Captain Stubing, getting to the party and like doing the little waddle and like trying not to embarrass her. Just like all of this is building to a wonderful fish out of water scenario, which is Jim Carrey, his Ace Ventura, being put into high society. Like that is pinnacle comedy right there. And he obviously goes around, he's like eating the hors d'oeuvres and like making faces with like the cheese and like whatever is in his mouth. yeah. And then he has the bathroom bit, you know, where he comes out of the after the shark tank and his clothes are ripped and everything, and he goes, "Woo, do not go in there." And he's like dripping and he has water in his pocket and he just hits his pocket and it just sprays.
That little little water fountain.
And I also want to bring it back to Courtney Cox. I think Courtney Cox is doing an incredible job playing the straight man in this scenario. And it really gives credence to what type of movie star she was going to be, especially in Scream. And if she didn't have friends holding her back, I feel like she could have even done more movies and been a greater foil for more iconic leads. But unfortunately, that didn't happen.
No, I get that. I get that. Brian, my friend. How are you feeling about this point of the film, and how are you doing with that pun?
I think I'm all right with both. I'm just going to start talking about it, and I'm just hoping it comes naturally. I feel like the scene we see his apartment, like where he walks in and all of these animals come out, like I can't help but think, like, that apartment must smell awful. Like, that must be the worst smelling. Like, that apartment smells like 70 kinds of shit. Like, it can't not if they're there all. And secondly, I don't know, Ace claims to be, like, all about the animals, but there's no way that these animals are living their best lives in his shit. There's no way that they should be there. Like, there's no
way. This is not PETA approved, you don't think? PETA approved, no?
I don't know. Like that's all I can think when I see that scene now. Just like, damn, this is like animal abuse. Like to have all these things here. Like there's no way. Like, well,
it's okay because they love him.
Yeah, like they are there because they love him. He's like more of an animal cult leader than animal. that sort of just sort of ran through my mind on this one. I feel like we go to the, like, you know, the scene where he goes to the party and he pulls the whole what was it, the he's a health inspector bit, like he's trying to make the host nervous by like saying like, I wouldn't eat the bad day, like it's like the people are freaking them out. Like it's so good because like it's a cartoon. It's so Bugs Bunny. It's so like he's treating the like bad guy like an idiot, and the bad guy's just buying it. He's just like, it's so good. And then the whole like full 5 minutes of him not being in danger, jumping around balconies, him like, that scene affected me greatly as a child. That was the rest of my childhood. Hanging on to a balcony that doesn't fall anywhere, like absolutely just like changed everything.
You know, we've all done that too.
I mean, oh god,
no matter where it is.
Yeah, producer Steph, I know that every time.
it really changed the game on every railing I would walk past as a kid for the rest of my life. And then of course we get to the shark scene. You know, good foreshadowing from the blowjob scene earlier. it's just so. I feel like his scream in that moment was like It was like Home Alone-esque in iconic moments. His oh, like so, like man, it's burned into my mind. And then he's whipped around the pool, and of course, like maybe like aside from Alrighty Then, by the way, of which there's only five in the whole film. Isn't that weird? Like
That's
the
quite a
line's
lot,
actually kind of
actually.
short.
Really?
But do not go in there. Permeated American culture in a way that you can still see the stink lines of it. You know, it's I forgot what a pun was, but I guess he needed a bigger puss.
Okay, that
Because it
made
was a
up for
Jaws
everything.
reference,
No,
and
you're
he
okay.
talks with his
You said
butts.
the That
Is
works.
that a
You know,
pun?
no,
I
not
forgot what
necessarily,
the
but
pun
it's
was
like that
entirely. My
works.
brain deleted the
No,
meaning the second I was tasked
I
with it.
also want to make a
Yeah.
side note. I've never seen somebody look at the camera with the biggest smile on their face and go, that place has to smell like shit. Like I've never seen
Yeah.
somebody deliver a line with so much confidence and like joy.
I've never been more sure of anything in my life, okay? Like,
All right,
I'm
I get that.
100%.
I get that. Because his apartment was like Noah's Ark with almost two of freaking every animal there. Now, with that over there, so goodness gracious here. Digress. Now, yeah, I have to ask you guys. You know, Ace Ventura is a different kind of man. We know that it's a shark, right? We understand the iconic scenes of him doing Mission Impossible across unneeded railing. We get that he was a dick eating a little bit of the snacks thrown to his side, acting like it was nothing. We get the fact that he was trying to intimidate a big capitalist asshole that happens to have a lot of money and, you know, get the fact that he might have been the bad guy. We find out he wasn't, but he has a shark. I have a question. Would any of you have the balls to walk across that thing with that dark water underneath it? I'm gonna say right now, fuck that. If I was over there and there was a tank of water, I'm not crawling on that thing going, Snowflake, stop. No. I'm gonna be on the other side tapping on it. Snowflake, no, I am not happy with it. I don't know about would any of you guys decide to go across that tank?
Absolutely not. I also have a thing against dark water. I stay away from
Oh,
it.
if you're paying me, maybe, but that's some
Okay.
fear factor shit that I don't do.
No one's paying him to do that specifically. Like
Yeah.
he could have stood by the edge of the tank and like dangled a fish without getting all the way out in the middle of it, like on a little dank, like that's just no, I wouldn't do it, and I don't get why he did it. Like
Nah. With John, with all of you guys, Jonathan especially, something with dark water, like I love it, but for something not seeing underneath it, I mean, God, there is a crazy fact that there's like, I won't go into this, but there's a lot of the Earth's underwater that's not explored, so we won't go in there, not yet at least. But now,
same reason we will never go on a cruise. Screw that. No.
there
There's a
you
lot of
go.
reasons to not go
There.
on a cruise, like a ton. Like you're right.
Golly. So now we understand that how intense Mr. Ventura is. We see the fact that he discovers that his first part of the investigation has came up false. This is not him. Or it's not, not what he thought it was. They went to also look the fact that he came up with the idea that he wants to investigate the whole team, the actual Miami Dolphins team that went over to the playoffs with the actual championship ring that was associated with the gem. Goes through some crazy, crazy ways of getting this into, going in cars, cussing a guy, waiting him to like flip him off so he can see his finger,
All
going
highly
to run.
comedic.
All this fantastic going to running out of people on track, seeing how fast he gets to him. What I love about it is the fact that, he's trying to show how lanky he's still catching up, to admitting the fact that he has a hop on one to actually get chloroform and actually take him down and look at a ring. Going to the urinal, looking at one guy and seeing over there and the guy playing the joke coming back. And in all
He wasn't
honesty,
playing a joke.
no, yeah, okay.
No.
So here's the deal. I'm gonna get to this. I want to talk about this topic now.
Okay.
Real quick before going to this, there is some when it comes to comedy, there's a lot of things that age over time. And when we come into our areas, there are some jokes that we're about to talk about that were jokes then, and more of the comedic aspect. It wasn't a very popular thing for us to talk about now, and it was joke on a shameful way, not a joke on a promotional, allowing somebody make it the joke at their own expense. Unfortunately, we did that with a lot of gay culture. So there are gay jokes and trans jokes coming up into this here for anybody who's watching right now that I do not want anybody to think that we're condoning to make fun of another individual because they love who they want to love and be who they are. So 100% please, for the viewers that are watching now and the listeners, this is not condoning any of that. This is just talking about the community aspects of the film at that time being and where we're going. So just a side note. So. So at this point we see here the urinal concept of actually going in investigating the ring. We see the gentleman think he's hitting on it and pursuing Jim Carrey afterwards. Now he has these things in which also being punched in the face of going and actually see if the diamond was there in general. Excuse me, I have Apollo, one of the non-talk cats here, going for my dumplings and chicken nuggies. Gotta go over there, my friend, cutie. That being said, we see these extraordinary measures that Ace Ventura is going for to see who has the missing gem. He gets to coming up, you know, not being very successful in any way, shape, or form. And he goes to having a very, which I see kind of a toxic scene with Courtney Cox's character going into, expressing his frustration that he can't get what he needs. So he spews toxic things her way of calling her fatty, understanding these things. And at that time being, it was a very popular thing in the 90s to show tough guys being mean towards the girls they like, in a sense, just to get their attention. And you kind of see her go in the ways of saying, oh, I don't know what you need. And she gets a call. We find out that a friend of the organization, which happens to be a trainer, looks like committed suicide, that was thrown off his actual balcony of his apartment complex that we see. We find all this stuff out. Jim Carrey goes to the scene. Honestly, I missed the iconic butt talking scene that Brian did a little joke for us a little earlier, that he's actually talking to one of the police officers in
Tone
the
Loke.
Actual.
That's when Tone Loke's in the movie.
So you. Yeah. Emilio as
a so I think he was talking about the apartment scene where everybody was like the guy gets thrown off the balcony and the window closes and he does that iconic thing. I think we're getting it back, maybe.
Here?
Yeah.
Get back. Hey. Good. Oh, there's movement. Less movement. He looks like a very concerned mime right now.
We're probably going to get it back. But at this point, with like the Courtney Cox like jokes and everything like that, and this whole apartment scene where the trainer dies and everything, how did you guys feel about like that joke, like the fat jokes and the apartment scene and everything like that? Jonathan, what did you think about this?
Yeah, I think it's comedy that doesn't hold up. I think at the time it was kind of needlessly taking his frustrations out verbally. I think what it does is it shows Courtney Cox's strength in that she doesn't buy or give in to any of his insults. And other than that, I feel it's a little, they could have handled that differently and given him a different way to take out his anger that showed a bit more class instead of just taking it down to a really dirty level.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with you, but I feel like this was a very popular thing to do, especially
sure,
in the early
90s. Yeah.
Which is, like now, of course, is you can't do it. But what did you think about that, Brian?
Oh, I feel like this is like the stretch of the movie where we realize that kind of Ace Ventura is just kind of like, he's kind of like a superhuman eighth grade boy from 1994. Like, it's just when things go wrong for him, he calls a girl fat. Like, he's just like, it's kind of this, you start to see Ace is a good detective, but kind of a real piece of shit. Like, he's kind of not a nice guy, or like very, there's that whole scene where he's eating sunflower seeds. Oh, snack mention there. I read that in the prompts. But when he's eating sunflower seeds and he's just putting them all over Courtney Cox's desk as he's like eating them, he's like, would you like an ashtray? No, I don't smoke. But he's just like, I don't know. He's just such a jerk. Like, but he's kind of got a Sherlock thing going, where people can't stand to be around him. Who could? He's extremely obnoxious, but he is a good detective, which is just kind of
I don't know. I'm not calling Ace Ventura like a savant detective. I think he's just an asshole, kind of like, but.
No, yeah, I get that, and I don't mean to cut you guys off here. And you know, you all make excellent points, and I love that I transitioned into this, considering the fact that we have the ability here to see that he, a, you know, Jim Carrey and Ace Ventura are one and the same, but separate at the same time. So we see him ability to take this character, and you can tell by some of the lines he says, the character in general is a dick. I mean, he's like a Sherlock Holmes. That's a very excellent portion in which he, like, you know. God damn it. Sorry, guys. The crew, I'm looking at one of the messages that
Oh,
sent our
the
way. It was so
chat's
fucking
down
hilarious.
there. I can see it and everything. I didn't look. Look at that.
But anyway, on the same note, we see the fact that Jim Carrey's ability to take this character and still put a little twist on it, make it semi-likable, because some of these lines here have been kind of rough in general. But now, digressing a little bit, we're going to coming short on time here, so I'm going to zip to a little zip through this here so we can get some additional conversations going before we cut this off. But now we understand that there's a murder here, and it's actually claimed as a suicide. And Jim Carrey says, no, it's not. Sorry, Ace Ventura says, no, it's not. And they're like, what's your evidence? What's going on? Which a very iconic role comes into play where he actually comes up and says, oh, look, well, if this is the case, this lady says he heard, heard him, from the balcony. But how could he hear them if the door was shut? He went, doing this whole ridiculous thing. It was great, fantastic, bringing a great point, showing the fact that it was most likely a murder. And everybody's like, oh, now they're thinking about an LABD, really thinking about it. That being said, fast forward, he goes through some situations, goes back to talking, I believe, to Courtney Cox in some certain area and sees that there's a picture. This picture actually has an additional player that doesn't have on Ace Ventura's picture, which happens to be the character they know as Jonathan. Please correct me, what's the character's name?
Oh my God, I actually don't remember.
Oh my God,
Ray Finkle. You're talking about Ray
Finkel.
Finkel. We're
Finkel,
talking about
thank you.
Ray
Ray
Finkel.
Finkel. Thank you. I can't
Yeah.
believe I
Ray
forgot the name of
Finkel,
Finkel. Ray
aka
Finkel.
spoilers, Lois Einhorn.
Yeah, no,
Yes.
thank you. Exactly.
Yeah.
So we see Ray
Finkel
Finkel at this
Einhorn.
point, right?
Finkel
I
Einhorn.
heard. So as we see this here, he takes a picture, he's freaking out, finds out who Finkel is, goes to go ahead a very, very Floridian-like place that is a really run-down shack of a home that's seen some better times. That's what shows all these areas that say, you failed. There's things that are all hate towards Finkel. We find out that Finkel did not make the winning field goal kick for the actual Super Bowl, the playoffs that they were actually doing at the time. Blaney blames it on Dan Marino for not putting the laces out. We see this because once he goes in there, very questionable parents going into it. Looks like a senile mom and a very grouchy dad with a shotgun that's ready to take his head off. But he reminds and he kind of fools them to believe that he's a big fan. In reality, dad knows something's going on. We see that in Ray Finkel's area, there is so much hate towards Dan Marino and the Miami Dolphins, even a replay of the actual recorder itself. So we see that we have a possible psycho. When we find out that he actually is supposed to be sent to an area that's equivalent to, like, your modern, I hate saying it, like a sanitarium in a sense. This institution's not the most friendliest towards mental health, but they sent him there. We find out that he breaks out. We find out that all trio of you guys mentioned before that there's a connection between Finkel and Einhorn. Finkel and Einhorn. We also go back to the memory of the fact that actually Einhorn had a very intimate situation with Ace Ventura inside the office, in which he made an area saying, "Ooh, wait a minute, is that your gun against my hip?" Now, there are some references that have been preemptively going on to this whole situation that we're about to get at the moment. We then find out that he then finds out that Finkel is Einhorn and does a dramatic concept of, brushing his teeth, doing these things like we mentioned before, guys. The comedic aspects, I think, of this was the unexpected concept of him being surprised. Don't think it's funny the fact that it was a guy that kissed him, but the fact that he was surprised about the whole situation. We now know the fact that he understands it, and then it fast forwards into understanding that they have a actual guilty person. Now, they take off to this boating dock like area, which he finds out in the investigation where he could possibly be. There's dramatic scenes that we see actually Ace Ventura actually using a little fan thing as a little boat propeller going into it. We see that there's two big goons that happen to have Dan Marino in there with Snowflake inside the center of this area. We find out later with this dramatic tale that they are holding Dan Marino hostage. At the time being, we are not too sure where actual Einhorn is, but Ace Ventura shows up, does a dramatic thing, blows up, says, "Hey, I'm here," has an interaction. We then see Finkel, I mean, slash Einhorn. Now, before this, what should we call it? Einhorn actually kisses Dan Marino, keeps on going, "What do you remember me, Dan? Who I am, Dan?" Laces out, Dan, mentions all these references, giving an idea that Dan Marino is really unaware that who this person is. Now, as this is happening, Ace Ventura is about to break this whole situation going out, and Einhorn gets on the radio, says, "It's Ace Ventura. He's the one that actually did the whole thing. He kidnapped Snowflake. He tried to kill Dan Marino." And all these cops are now coming out to this whole area, flooding out. I've never seen LA cops respond so fast to a situation in my life before. No offense, LA cops. I'm sorry, cough, cough. Don't give me later. But that being said, they somehow mystically make it to this dock. As this Ace Ventura then is trying to make a point, beginning, all the cops are aiming their guns at Ace Ventura because they think that he's the one that's doing it. Einhorn, at the time being, is doing the same thing. Ace Ventura's like, "No, this is the real guilty party." Does a dramatic thing, tries to take the wig off. The wig doesn't come off. Does it, tries to say, "Does she still have chest?" Pulls that off, reveals. And at this point, you're like, "Oh, what's going on, Finkline?" Like, I see all these notes. Faces out, Finkline, her Finkline. Internal conflict, craziness left and right. Then we find out Dan Marino sitting in the back is like, "Hey, just look between the legs," and all of a sudden makes reference to see male genitalia behind. Almost every department person in the area does a throw up thing. I'm thinking reference because I'm thinking Finkel kissed all the other people there. Once again, we want to make a preference that we do not believe that jokes towards trans people nor gay people are the greatest thing when it's at their expenses. But just for the sake of the story, this is what actually happens in it. Now, why this is happening, every minute to find out the fact that Jim Carrey actually is the great detective, Courtney Cox, there's the whole area, thinks that he's a good guy. Dan Marino considers him the savior of the whole thing. And now the situation we have, we see him going all the way to the area that the fact that he is now acknowledged and ready and about to be acknowledged at the game itself in the Miami Dolphins. Now, yes, there is a iconic scene, a name on there. Worst case of hemorrhoids I ever seen is one of the scenes that was on that particular one. Now, that being said, you have him being at the actual game. They're about to make an acknowledgement towards him, and the iconic dove makes its appearance, right? Now, he makes one of the efforts towards the dove, and then we see what looks like the mascot of the Philadelphia Eagles scares it off. And ironically, he dukes it out with an actual eagle as they do his acknowledgement of saying, "Hey, you helped us, blah, 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 blah." And he does that iconic smile towards it. Now, whew, that was a lot because I understand we have a lot to talk about, and we can do a lot of things. Now, at this point where we're at, guys, are you guys pro Ace? Was the film enjoyable? And is it still holding up to your expectations today as it once did before? Brian, I'm going to start off with you, my friend. How are we feeling?
Yeah, it's going to be a big no. Yeah, big old no. For the third act of Ace Ventura, Pet Detective, poor Ray Finkel, poor Lois Einhorn. honestly, absolutely, driven mad by the insane, masculine driven fucking, yes. Florida sports fans who tortured him and, just defaced his parents' house and was truly driven insane by for the mistake that he made, so much that he committed himself and then would see an opportunity in a missing hiker article in a newspaper, which by the way, isn't really super zoomed in on in the movie. It's a huge plot point that Ray Finkel discovers Lois Einhorn's missing person thing and then slips into her life. And honestly, I think
question. Do you think he, producer staff mentioned this, and I don't mean to interrupt you, Brian, here. Do you think, in your opinion, that he had something to do with her disappearance?
I don't. I don't think that he may. I think he was committed at the time. And when he saw a missing person, he saw it as an opportunity to kind of honestly, I wish Ray Finkel had just been Lois Einhorn and just lived a new life. wish that Lois like they were so obsessed with revenge that they somehow had escaped from a mental asylum and gotten top surgery and inserted themselves into the life of a person who is gone missing, and it all falls apart because they can't let go of revenge. I think she had a pretty good life. And just it would take, we don't have long enough for me to get into Ray Finkel's plan. I have so many pages of the logistics of Ray Finkel's
And
plan
for the record,
to
we can
get
try to do a
the
part two of this. If we get a response from,
Mandalorian.
our watchers here,
I don't
we
know
can even,
if it's
you know
worth
what?
that much,
What, hold on, hold on. When I made part two, we're also talking about Pet Detective part two, the actual part two. So we can easily segue if all three of you agree for the listeners too that come in. We can also do that. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. But go on, continue, my friend. Go on.
yeah, and anyway, yeah, the whole like it's just like when Ace Ventura is just punching the shit out of Lois Einhorn, and it's like she's really a man, so it's okay to hit the like it's the whole vibe, the whole sentiment. It's just so bad and rotten, and now it's just like it's hard to watch. It's hard to like he pulls her clothes off. It's just
Yeah.
ugliness. Ugliness and the whole finale of the thing, just like it's this big goofy stupid thing, but like the whole joke I feel like is like a man wants to become a woman. That's the entire joke and the punchline, and it's just gross.
I
like
get that.
like to just see them like treat a person like that, it's so bad. Like totally, it's why I give it 2 stars.
I
Like
get that.
yeah, it's like I would have given it one, but like I'm glad Jim Carrey had a career after this. The Mask is my favorite movie, like ever. Like and it's but I mean, yeah, you can't watch the sequel. Like, don't show your kids this one. Show them the sequel, and there never was a first one.
I
Like
get you. Oh man, no, I get that. Eric,
have an issue.
Eric, Oscar, we're gonna start with you too, but please, by all means, continue. Same thing here. At this point here, what's your opinion of the film? Your rating as it is, it's staying here. Is it still hold to what's going on? If there's anything that really sticks out to you the most?
No, this is the ending of the film is really what I gave the rating for. Well, what brought it up was Jim Carrey because like his comedic timing and everything is like paramount. But the Ray Finkel Einhorn thing, like that whole trans like thing was very popular to do in the early 90s, and I just it did not age well. The whole Courtney Cox like calling her fat and stuff like that did not age well. And I get it was an early 90s things. We progress, we grow, we learn, but it doesn't stand up to now to this point. The ending kind of felt a little bit lackluster because it went from the fight to the game to there wasn't any
Yeah,
real resolution to
no
anything.
follow-up.
There was no follow-up. And then they made the second movie and they didn't even touch base on the other. So like it just was very unfinished for me.
I get
But
that.
he's great. Love his acting, his comedy. Courtney Cox did a great job. I can't remember the girl who plays Einhorn, but I even think she
Sean
did
Young.
great. Thank you. Like I loved her in her role and everything like that. It just the jokes fell flat
No,
at the
100%. And both of you are true in sentiment by all means. But Jonathan, as well, my friend, coming towards the end of the film, where we're at, does your rating still stay true to, stay true to what it is currently? How are you feeling about the film?
To quote the iconic Roger Ebert, kids might like it.
I
I didn't get any of this. I didn't understand the
If
ending of
you
Ace Ventura: The Kingdom at
exactly,
all.
if you don't know what's happening, you're going with the ride. You're just like, sure, okay.
Absolutely. I don't know what that thing in her underwear was. I didn't get
I did not
it.
either. There's
Yeah.
prosthetic though. I saw it today and I was just like, that was actually very impressive.
I will also just give you a taste of Ace Ventura 2. Also, there was something in there I didn't know. I thought it was an apple. There's something in Ace Ventura 2. I thought it was an eaten apple. Anyways,
Oh my God. I had
have
to
fun
watch it again
dissecting
anyway, but now I'm gonna be looking for it.
that. So yes, 1.5 stars for me. The jokes and everything in this latter half of the movie do not hold up. The clean pair of shorts line is funny. The ultimate, like chewing all the bubble gum, is funny to get the taste out of his mouth. But then he, says he quotes the line back to himself, and he goes, "The gun, your gun is sticking into my hip," and then like just shrugs it off, and like all of that, like I don't want to.
Yeah.
it it doesn't hold up, and it is unfortunate.
There's actually a banana next to two apples on Einhorn's desk.
I gotta go back and check that out.
And speaking of Sean Young, I think she is incredible in this. She does a really good job with what she's given, and she is a formidable adversary for Ace Ventura's goofiness. And she's like the perfect person to play this police department head and the person that Jim Carrey has to foil. I mean, I think that her comedy and his comedy kind of work because they're opposites.
No, totally, totally. I'm going to look in the comments over here real quick. Q-Ball goes and says, I have a joke. Why can't you mix McDonald's and Wendy's? You can't have it your way and loving it at the same time. Damn. Oh, my God. That is like a life lesson sometimes in different ways than others. Q-Ball comes in with Eric Saves the Day. We have Liza D. Official coming in as a way to step in and be a team AO, talking about pour one out for Lois Eyehorn. Officially, I appreciate it. Definitely, definitely, definitely. We don't think she's giving justice. And she also repeats going, yeah, Brian, high fives all day. So once again, I love the fact that we over there, Brian, also well done from Q-Ball, just being pro, bringing up a really excellent point that we actually want to represent here. I gave it a 3.5. I'm gonna be real with you. I think Jim Carrey takes something and makes a film iconic, that the script is horrific, but his character acting is makes it memorable. I would honestly told you I would have rated this 4 out of 5 if I didn't rewatch it 2 weeks ago now. I would have told you immediately if you told me what I've thought about it, huh? Because I didn't think about it. But seeing it now, it's like, whoo, some things are kind of heavy. It does give me a more of a love for actual Jim Carrey in general. But seeing sometimes the ways that Hollywood portrayed a lot of stereotypes for a lot of minorities in there just didn't feel right coming into it, you know, so it replayed itself. Go figure on that. Now, that being said, Eric, where can we find you on your socials, my friend?
You can find me on all socials, except for the X app, Twitter app, whatever it's called. You can find me on all socials at Heartless7. That's HARTL, the letter 3, or the number 3, SS7. And yeah, you can find me there.
Fantastic. Jonathan, my friend, where can we find you on your socials?
You can find the podcast over at Instagram at This Means Podcast. I'm also on Facebook, and you can also stream the show anywhere you download your shows for audio. And you can follow me over at The Dark Pilgrim at anywhere that is on socials as well.
Excellent. Brian, where can we find you on your socials, my friend?
You can find me on TikTok and Instagram, pretty much mostly just stick to there. I'm at Wayward Scientist on my stuff, and I, you know, talk about video games and movies and obscure media. It's kind of my whole deal.
Excellent. We're glad to have all three on here. Both Eric and Jonathan, always love working with you guys. Brian's first time working with you, and I hope you continue to join us. It'd be fantastic. This is pretty much all the time we're having today. Just a little side note, we are 32% from our goal to show some support for donating to the Trevor Project, with right now with a goal of $200. Coming in here as well, last but not least, remember thanks for tuning in. Be sure to join us on Discord, keep the conversation going, as well as subscribing to all platforms at NonTalk Network. Tune into our next show. I am Cowie. We'll be discussing, actually not myself, let me actually go a little shift down here, where we'll actually host Jordan and a lovely trio of individuals on Basic Binges. Oh, just kidding. I'm just kidding. We will talk about something else, and we'll find what that is. It looks like the Grand Budapest Hotel. Is that correct? All right. I apologize to confuse all our actual watchers, listeners, and also people that will be involved with the show. Once again, thank you, everyone, for tuning in and joining us today, where we talk about the 30th anniversary of the Pet Ace Ventura Pet Detective. Oh, my God. That just hit me. My eyes of dread. The 30th anniversary. Love, peace, chicken grease. Never, ever grow up and never surrender. Oh, my goodness. Have a lovely day.